interview with North Carolina Representative Ann C. Barnes on Monday, November 27, 1995. The interview is being conducted for the Southern Oral History Program series entitled The North Carolina Politics Project. My name is Joe Monnier, M-O-S-N-I-E-R. The interview is being conducted in Hamilton Hall on the UNC Chapel Hill campus. This cassette number is 11.27.95-AB.
Okay. Oops. Representative Barnes, I thought we might start with a very brief biographical sketch.
Okay. What would you like to know?
Well, just birthplace, okay. Family history,
okay.
Well, education, mm-hmm. Marriage, arrival.
Born here in North Carolina in Gaston County. My father was worked for Duke Power, and we lived near the Duke Power plant. Duke Power is out of the housing business now, but they used to be in such isolated places that they provided housing for their employees. It was out in the country, and I went to a small elementary school out there, mostly with others whose parents worked for Duke Power at that steam station, but also with a lot of farm children. It was a farming area, and definitely a rural area. So I had a pretty good look at what it was like to be poor in North Carolina. We, relatively speaking, those who were employed by Duke Power, generally speaking, were in a little better financial situation, but we had many children who went to school with me that didn't have shoes to wear and didn't have anything to bring for lunch because we didn't have a cafeteria or anything. You brought your lunch. And I mentioned this because I think it had an impact on me at a very early age to champion some of the social issues that I do now and have helped to form my feelings about poverty and other things in our society that handicap people from being in the mainstream. And
would you have had much contact with African Americans in Gaston County in those years?
Not a great deal because the schools were not integrated, racially integrated, but there were black families that lived and worked for Duke Power, but they didn't live on, their housing was apart from ours, and their schooling was apart from ours. But we did play together some. And I really was unaware until I was in about the seventh or eighth grade that blacks in our society were really discriminated against to the extent that they were. We had a school for Negro children back further in the country, even from the school that I went to, and we took all of our old books to that school, and the school principal would pick some of the biggest and strongest boys to go and help carry those books, and I just insisted that I go because I wanted to see what this was about. And so I had my first peek into a one-room schoolhouse with a pot-bellied stove to keep it warm, all ages of children in it, and who were the recipients of our old books. And that had a profound effect on me. And I remember to this day how I felt. And I felt a little betrayed because my parents hadn't prepared me for that. I didn't know it, and of course I held them responsible because they were the adults in my life. How could you have let this happen? Though my parents individually were not racist at all, still I blamed it on that generation because this situation existed and because nobody had told me about it. So that had a real impact on the way I felt about racial discrimination. So I had some childhood experiences that I guess have served me well in helping me have opinions about things that I might be able to impact. I went to high school in a little town near the steam station that I lived at was called Riverbend Steam Station, and it was right there in the bend of the Catawba River. We rode the bus into Mount Holly to go to high school, and I was very involved with school. I liked school, and I liked all of the activities that surrounded it. I also was involved with my sisters in, while I was still in high school, in a dance studio. We took dancing lessons from the time I was very, very small, and so my sister, my oldest sister, opened a dance studio, or several of them, and I was involved with that as well. And so I was working on the weekends when I was in school, in high school, doing teaching dancing. And I did not have the opportunity to go to college. The sister next to me did, and we just didn't have the money, and there were not the scholarships at that time that there are now. So I'm not recommending that people not go. I wish I had had the opportunity to go, and have since had opportunity to take some college courses, but I have no degrees to hang on my wall, and it's a part of my life I really regret. I wish that I had, and I've tried to gather my education in other ways, I had the dancing school, so I went right on into more dancing schools, and I worked after I got out of high school, and I also took a job with the Duke Power at that steam station, and so I was doing both of those things. I enjoyed a lot of different hobbies and was a very active person. My father was extremely interested in government. He did not run for office himself. He never failed to vote, and he talked a lot about it. And it was a dinner conversation when I was a child and on up through my teen years to talk about what was happening in the world and the various people who were running for office. And so I developed an interest from quite young. I admired my father a great deal, and if he thought it was important, it was important. And so I guess I had a very early introduction to politics, though it wasn't presented just as politics. It was presented of this is what's important, what impacts our lives, and people who are elected impact our lives. And so I got that from an early age.
Did your father have political heroes or a strong partisan
affiliation? Just about everybody at that time, this was in the 30s in North Carolina, were Democrats regardless of how they voted. The scraps were in the Democratic Party, and there was not much of a Republican Party at that time, or at least if it was there, you couldn't see it.
Maybe in the mountains.
Everybody that I had any association with, including my father, was registered Democrat, but he tended to be conservative Democrat, and maybe there were some who weren't. Certainly across the country there were those who weren't, and race was a big issue at that time, and of course still is. It's just painted differently now. It just looks different now, but race was then an issue, and particularly in the South, and the whole Dixiecrat era came in, and that was mostly over race, regardless of what someone might say it was over. That's what it was over, primarily. And the Democratic Party in the South looked a bit different from the way it looked in other places. And I know that my father did vote Republican sometimes, even though he on the national scene during that time, where the South was in an uproar more or less, trying to adjust to the fact that that things were going to change, and that black people were going to insist on being included, and that caused a lot of turmoil in politics in the South. So the Democratic Party looked some different then. it was interesting, I think, about my father's approach toward people in leadership. I know that he felt a bit betrayed by Franklin Roosevelt in a number of ways. I think he felt that he was too liberal, for one thing. And I'm not sure that he supported him, I don't know. And also in the negotiations after the war, he felt that he gave away too much, and I know he faulted him for that. During the negotiations with the Russians and the British, and felt like he sort of sold us out a little bit. I remember coming in from playing, and he was listening to the radio reports that President Roosevelt had died, and he had tears running down his face. And this was, so you see, there was a respect there that we don't always see now, a respect of those who are our leaders, whether or not they were our first choice. And I find that sometimes that's missing now, that there's a disrespect for those who are doing the best they can simply because they didn't represent your every wish or your preferences. But that taught me something, to try to respect those who are doing the job, whether they're doing it the way I would like them to or not, because these are hard jobs, and to step up to leadership is very difficult and gets more difficult every year. But that impressed me, so I remember it. And I said, "Daddy, why are you crying?" You know, I was disturbed by it. And he said, "The president has died." And I said, "Well, I didn't think you liked him much anyway, you know." And he said, "He's our president. I respected him. I didn't always agree with him, but I respect him, and I respect the position." And a lot of that respect, I think, is gone, and that I regret that. I hope we'll get it back somehow, some way.
You were married in 1952,
mm-hmm.
and then your life in the next sort of decade took what path?
We moved around a lot. My husband was in the service, mm-hmm. and we moved around a bit while he was doing his time in the service, and we had children, so that was a new thing. That kept me busy. Back in those times, you know, the restrictions on being able to vote when you moved, you had to be somewhere a year. And so we moved fairly often as Billy was in the service, and then when he got out of the service, he was trying to finish his schooling. He had left college to go into the service, and so it seemed that we moved so much that we were frustrated that we couldn't vote. I mean, you know, because I thought it was important. And, of course, those laws changed, and that made it possible to participate. But I tried to get involved in politics wherever we were, at least insofar as helping my party, which I had chosen, the Democratic Party, and the candidates, in what ways I could, and with small children. I remember in Chapel Hill, and this was interesting to me, I wanted to be involved here when Hubert Humphrey was running, because he was one of my heroes, and I called finally found out how to call the Democratic Party here in Orange County, and said, I want to volunteer to help. What can I do to help? And I was told, well, I could bake something for the bake sale. You know? So, and that was not so long ago. I mean, as time goes, it was in the 60s. And so I think I did bake something for the bake sale, but I said I'd really like to do some other things too. So. But that was interesting, because since that time, women have been leaders in the party here, and there's a lot to do. I don't even think we have bake sales anymore. Maybe it would be nice to go back to a few of those.
You lived in Atlanta and New York between mm-hmm. the 50s
yes.
and early 60s?
Yes, when Billy finally finished here at UNC, he he got a job with McGraw-Hill Publishing Company and as a writer. His Billy majored here in RTVMP and minor with a journalism minor, and he was hired, and that meant moved to New York. So we did, and we had those small children that we took along because my youngest child was born just right before he graduated. I missed graduation because I was in the hospital here having our second child. But we moved to New York, and he commuted into the city. We actually lived across the George Washington Bridge in New Jersey. He commuted. He disliked it from the beginning, not the work, the commuting, and the bigness of it. It certainly didn't have that small town, southern town charm. And I rather enjoyed it because I was out of the rat race and had the opportunities to go into the city when I wished to take advantage of some of the exciting parts of New York. But because he was not happy with it, he wanted to make a change. And when the company who had put him through a training program saw that he was going to leave, they offered him a job in Atlanta with their Atlanta bureau, which happened to be open. And so he got an extraordinary opportunity. And we moved to Atlanta, which got us back in the South, and we were glad to be back in the South. Atlanta was a big town, not like it is now. It was bordering on being small or being big. Mm-hmm. You know, still had some charm to it. It's a lot bigger now. I'm sure the people who live there think it still has charm, but it was a different city then, and we enjoyed being there. So he worked with the McGraw-Hill Publishing Company as the bureau chief, Atlanta bureau chief, and Atlanta was fun. It was a fun place to live. I enjoyed it, and my children were growing up, beginning to grow up then. But we came back to North Carolina. I'll tell you how that happened. Terry Sanford was governor then, and he had a well-known North Carolina writer, John Ely, working with him. And sort of an idea person, and they started a lot of programs, different programs. And late in the night in Atlanta one night, the phone rang. We were in bed, and the phone rang, and it was John, who sometimes kind of operated on different hours sometimes, you know.
He knew your husband previously?
He had taught him in college, and so he said, "Billy, I'm working with Terry Sanford on some things, and we've got some things going that we're calling our people back. We're calling our people back. We're trying to get our North Carolinians who have scattered to bring their talent back to the state, and we'd like to talk to you about coming back and a specific job that we'd like you to do." So this was in connection with the North Carolina Fund, which was an anti-poverty effort that preceded the Great Society and Vista Volunteers and all of that, because they really trained some of those people. It was funded primarily by Ford Foundation grants, and they had gotten George Esser, wonderful North Carolinian, who was at the Institute of Government at the time, to head up the North Carolina Fund, and it was to be based in Durham, and they wanted Billy to come back to do the publicity and promotional stuff and public relations for the North Carolina Fund. It was a five-year program, and Billy felt very strongly, as I did, that it would be an opportunity to do something very worthwhile, that he could use his talents to do something other than to make McGraw-Hill a richer place. And though he enjoyed and got a lot of wonderful experience working for McGraw-Hill, this was something that he could use that same talent and maybe do something that would be very worthwhile. So we talked it over and decided to come back to the state, and we wanted to come back anyway, and this was a great opportunity to do that. So we moved back, and we moved to Chapel Hill. our children were in school, had started school by this time, and we knew it was a good school system here, and Chapel Hill was a charming place to be, and you could afford to live in it then. housing wasn't quite as expensive as it is now, so we chose to settle back in Chapel Hill and have been here in Chapel Hill ever since. This was in the early 60s. Billy came in 63, and the children, I waited until school was out and we could sell our house in it, and down in the Atlanta area, and then moved up here in early 64. So that's what brought us back, and Billy worked with the fund, and I did some volunteer work with the fund as well. That was a very exciting and interesting time because in North Carolina and in many communities in the South, it was that that time when the civil rights movement was at its height, and the issues that Billy was working with and for were sometimes quite volatile. And so there were days when he would go out on trips and racially mixed groups that I worried about him because they did have some harrowing experiences out across the state. Mm-hmm. And but it was an interesting time, and I'm glad that we did it.
Can you speculate as to why you and your husband had sympathy for these kinds of issues way back then?
I wish I could. I attribute it to my parents and to their sincerity and their decency, and also to those experiences that I had as a child that I referred to earlier. And we were both involved in church and Sunday school. And I know that doesn't always produce someone with those kinds of leanings, but it did for both of us. And I'm not sure exactly what set of circumstances produce people with sympathies toward those kinds of issues, but I lived with poor people, and I saw firsthand how difficult it was. And then the whole racial thing, even as a child, with children that I played with, I was not allowed to go to school with. And it just was very obvious to me that that was wrong. It was just wrong, you know. And, of course, my husband, his family was very hard hit in the Depression, so he felt some poverty himself, you know, and the difficulties of not having any money. And his folks were very kind people too. And I don't know. I wish I knew what all those factors were, but those are some of them that I think pushed us in the direction that we did. That we've moved in on social issues. I can't say that I think my father and mother felt the same way we did. There was a generation difference there. Although personally, I never knew them to do anything of a discriminatory nature personally, but their overall thinking was in tune with what the South thought at that time, that you didn't mix the races. And, you know, I don't think I knew any adults at that time that didn't feel that way. But beneath all of that policy and overall thinking in those terms, they were always the first to help somebody who needed help, and regardless of what color they were. And so they didn't break the patterns of their time, but individually they were kind, good people. And that speaks a lot louder when you see your parents are helping people. That speaks louder than whatever the political policy of the day was.
Sure. You mentioned earlier that you called the Democratic Party, the local Democratic Party office in 68, and told
you
you could contribute something to the bake sale.
Yes.
Can you tell me something about your the beginnings of your involvement in the local party there, up say maybe up through Howard Lee's campaign, and how you came to be involved in that matter?
Well, at the time, in 68, a tremendous change, I think, occurred. I was new to it, and so I knew about it really after the fact, in Democratic Party politics in this county. The surge there for Hubert Humphrey and the times and the things that were changing and the civil rights movement and all of these things had produced quite a number of progressive Democrats in this county. It sort of was an awakening. I believe they were here already. But we had Democrats serving in office here in the county commissioners, et cetera, but they were conservative Democrats. And so that movement in 68 developed a new Democrat here, or brought them out. And that movement, that network, then moved right into the precinct meetings and brought their people in and got themselves elected to the party, the county party executive committee, et cetera. And so that just carried right over into that. And new people then were stimulated to work in the precincts and to get some people elected to the Board of Commissioners and other places here that had not before been. It had sort of been left to the old white guys, you know, and all of them, I knew many of them and thought the world of them, but a new breed sort of developed out of the civil rights and the active campaigns in the Hubert Humphrey campaign and other things, and that really carried through. And so I got involved in that, in beyond baking a cake for the bake sale. I got involved in local politics at that time. Now, Howard's campaign was in 69, his mayoral campaign. We knew the Lees at our church, and I taught their children in Sunday school, and they were delightful people, and we got to know something about Howard's political philosophy, and the issues that he was involved with were issues that I also was involved with. Some of them were zoning issues. Interfaith Council was trying to get some housing built at that time, and some things needed to happen at the town level to allow this, and he and I were both involved in that. And I think that set of issues was one of the reasons that he decided, well, maybe I should be doing something more direct where I've got a vote somehow, you know. Although I'll say that I was a little my eyebrows went up pretty sharply when he said, "I'm thinking of running for mayor." I thought it was great, but I thought, is it even possible, you know? But we knew him personally, and he was he cared about the same issues that I did. And we were showing up at the same public hearings and zoning hearings and this kind of thing. And so I was delighted that he decided to take on that challenge, and it was a good time for it. He's a great politician, and maybe he felt that it was a good time. And so that same organization that had come out of the 78, the 68 elections and carried through to the precinct meetings, and that new Democrat who was coming out to get involved, just built on that. We built on it. Many of those same people. The mayor's election is nonpartisan, but many of the same people were then in places of knowing who was in their precincts, and they had gotten a little experience, you know, about with campaigning, etc. And so it was a it was a time when we could move forward, and it was a whale of a campaign. We involved students for really, I guess, about the first time, and the whole issue of could they vote here or not vote here was there, and sometimes they're still trying to decide those things, who can vote and who can't. We sort of struck a chord with a lot of young people, and then a lot of the more progressive Democrats who had emerged in the late 60s, and black Democrats as well, out of the civil rights movement. A lot happened here during the civil rights movement, and of course John Ely wrote that book, you know, about what happened here, the free men. And there was a movement here. It was a movement, and you could feel it, and it was very exciting. So my husband and I got extremely involved in the campaign, and Howard calls us his campaign managers, and I guess in some ways we were, but many people shared that responsibility and did just marvelous work, day in and day out work. At that time, not as many women worked out of the home and so were more available to do the kind of grassroots, stay on the telephone all day, calling people, work all day in the headquarters. I mean, I worked in the headquarters and managed the headquarters with another woman, Peg Parker, and we did our, our kids would be in school and then we'd go get them and do things with them, but we were just, we had the time to do it because neither, and Flory Glasser also was another one who, she had the responsibility in that campaign of organizing the precincts and did a super job. And we just involved a lot of people, and it was an exciting campaign. Mm-hmm. People were ready to make some statements, ready to move in some other directions, ready for change. Mm-hmm. And so it worked.
Did you think that Lee obviously was the first black mayor to win election in a southern city?
A predominantly white southern city.
Southern city, that's right. Did it feel as if this movement of which you've been speaking might be able to recraft, say, the Democratic Party in North Carolina? Did you think it had that sort of potential? Or did this then feel like it was a product, more specifically, of the local circumstances of Chapel Hill?
Well, I don't know that it could have happened in any other town at that particular time. I just don't know that it could. I think it was more likely to happen here than in any other town that I know of in North Carolina. But I think to some degree the changes were happening. There were a lot of voter registration drives that had involved blacks before that time, and in the 68 elections and every time since 65, because the voter registration drives were happening and more black people were being registered and were getting involved in politics, most of it Democratic Party politics. So in many ways, I think that a restructuring of the Democratic Party did occur there. At that time, it was happening all over the state to some degree, different degrees in different areas. But black people were being encouraged very hard to be involved, and were being helped to be involved. And so I think that in many ways the Democratic Party did take on a new face, a different look then, changes have happened since then, but it did take on a new look, and it was, you could feel it happening, not just here, but in other places as well. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Howard decided to run for Congress, and that helped to stimulate interest, at least through the 2nd District. We were in the 2nd Congressional District at the time, and there was that, every time someone ran, it stimulated more black voter registration and more participation by blacks across the state, which is normal, natural. So over a period of those years, more and more, mm-hmm. involvement occurred, and I think it did reshape to some degree the Democratic Party. And I suspect it reshaped it in several ways, with more blacks involved and holding office in the party and participating on a regular basis and being a part of the decision making. And I'm sure that there were some who left the party because of that. You know, so the reshaping was happening in several different ways.
Did you have, through your work on the Lee campaign, did you have any contact with, obviously it was a local race, but then maybe later through the congressional race, did you have any contact, say, with other parts of the state's black political leadership, emerging black political leadership in those years?
Mostly, when he got into the congressional race, I did have more contact with blacks throughout the 2nd District and had the opportunity to meet some other black leaders, political leaders in other areas in that area. For example, in the mayor's campaign, we had Charlie Scott was a basketball player here at the time, and the star basketball player here. And Charlie volunteered to have an autographing for Howard Lee. Day of the campaign, a whole busload of Bennett College students arrived to help get out the vote. So there were, you know, there was a recognition that other blacks were willing to help him to win. And so in that way, yes, there was a response from other parts of the state to that. And we may also have gotten some contributions from blacks outside of this area. I don't remember that detail. It's been a while. But there was a willingness on the part of blacks from in other parts of the state to have some involvement there. And a sort of an excitement about it. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when he ran for Congress, I felt that even more.
How sharp or not at the time was your sense, late 60s, early 70s, that the position of African Americans within the Democratic Party would become an issue of such ultimate great consequences as has proven to be the case? Race has been so significant a factor in the ultimate party realignments, I think it's probably fair to argue. Did you anticipate that the civil rights question and the position of blacks in society would ultimately work that way and drive so many Democratic voters over to the Republican column?
Well, I wish that I could say that all of us who ran that wonderful campaign to get him elected were experienced and knew what we were doing. We did not. We did not know what we were doing. We were not slick. You know, we were not slick politicians. We didn't have any polls or anything. We were basically a group of people that were doing what we thought was right toward change and were affirming our support for inclusion of blacks in the decision-making process. And we did it. We did a lot of great things, but we didn't know what we were doing necessarily. You know, when I think back on it, I think we dared to use our creativity. We dared to take risks, and we dared to get down and work hard door to door. It was really a grassroots effort, and it's a campaign that now we would probably be advised by campaign consultants to, oh, you can't do that, you know. So there was a sincerity and an excitement then that I haven't, we experience less now. Now it's more of a formula campaigning and avoiding what may be a risk. It's become so slick. It was not slick. And so I'm not sure that I consciously stop to think, now what's the impact of this going to be on the Democratic Party now and in the future? It wasn't that, we weren't that kind of people at that time. Our minds were not on that. So I really can't say that we projected into the future to see what impact we were having. We were just having it. And if it went somewhere, then it went somewhere. But that was not our reason for having it. It was focused locally, and it was a group of people expressing our philosophy about inclusion and change.
Can you tell me, as best you recall, your reaction to the 72 election? Nixon wins handily at the national level. Jim Holzhauser's elected here as a Republican governor, beating Skipper Bowles. And Jesse Helms enters the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Well, none of those things happened in Orange County. And I was very involved in Democratic politics here. Involvement with Howard's campaign, even more of us, still the 68 crowd, and then even more of us out of the Howard Lee campaign took positions in the Democratic Party here. I became a vice chair of a precinct and then a chair of a precinct, and then I moved on up to be chair of the party, vice chair of the party, and then chair of the party later in the 70s. So my Democratic Party involvement and intensified as a result of my work with Howard's campaign. And here in Orange County, we were still voting heavily Democratic, and that wasn't happening in the rest of the state. I remember in particular the Eugene McCarthy time when only two counties in the state went for McCarthy, and that was Orange County and Northampton County, you know. So all through the 70s, Orange County was doing the same thing it had always done, and that was vote heavily Democratic, and in particularly for progressive Democratic candidates. So I was not in a place where I was feeling, where I could personally feel that. I could read it in the statistics, and I could see what happened and how the rest of the state voted, but I wasn't personally experiencing it in this environment, because we were continuing to do what we had already done, and to this day, I'm proud to say that we still vote Democratic here. So some changes have occurred, but I was very involved in the Democratic Party during those losses and felt them very personally as personal losses. But to say that I understood them or understood what was happening, was not a political analyst, and I didn't know exactly what was happening. Had I lived in some of those counties and heard what people were saying, I may have felt differently about it. I suppose that the heavy inclusion of black people in the Democratic Party had some of the effect of people fleeing, whether they fled the party or not, voting differently, more conservatively. And some may have been feeling some shift in the party because of the inclusion of blacks, but also for things other than that, I think, and some of that was happening at the national level, but also there were other social issues, not just racial issues, but attitudes toward poor people, attitudes toward taxing and spending on things that the were decided were important to do. Those issues were also there to take a progressive or a conservative stand on.
Can you describe the evolution of the Democratic Party across the decade of the 70s? As you mentioned a moment ago, you were involved first here at the level of the Democratic Party in the county and later as an executive committee, a state Democratic Party executive committee member from 74 to 78.
Mm-hmm.
What's happening is, Jim, can you tell me the story of Jim Jim Hunt's effort to build his hold on the party in those years?
Well, Jim Hunt was lieutenant governor first and the rising star in the Democratic Party, and at one time the only star in the Democratic Party since the governor's mansion had gone in a different direction, and a determined and talented campaigner, a determined politician, and a leader. So to win, I suppose, and to keep the party strong as a party, Jim Hunt did put a lot of his supporters in party positions. I mean, you know, they moved in so that really at one point the Democratic Party and the Hunt campaign were the same, you know. And I think for electing him and for electing other Democrats at the time, that was maybe a good thing. But after the election, it caused some problems because the devotion was to Jim Hunt rather than to Democratic Party politics in some cases. And so we began to experience across the state some conflict there, where people, once their objective was met and he was elected, they were not willing to do the scut work of the party, and so there were great vacancies and holes, and the party as an organization suffered some because it was